Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria,
Nikki,
and it's Bonnie.
A few days ago, I couldn't sleep, so I went through old YouTube videos, like just old stuff in general. And first, I was just stunned by how terrible the quality of the content that
Wait,
I was
your
recently.
Own videos? Oh.
Yeah. Like 4 years ago, absolutely horrible. Everything about it was terrible. But one thing that stuck out more than any other was the drastic changes to my voice from 4 years ago or 5 years ago, however, because some of these were really old videos that are no longer listed. They're no longer publicly viewable. They're just there. And if you're logged into my account, you can see them.
Did I tell you that Nazi versus Shemales, that was called? Was it autoplayed on my YouTube?
Did it?
And I was like, Aria looks so different.
That was another thing that I noticed. I mean, I did get, you know, forehead contouring
Shaming.
And brow reduction. I don't remember exactly what all they called it, but like that's just the brow area. Mm-hmm. There's a huge amount of changes to my physical appearance from 4 years ago. Almost certainly as a result of being on estrogen for the last 4 or 5 years or whatever. But it's shocking to go back through and look at those. Anyway, the point I wanted to get at was that when I hear myself each day to day, or just here on the show, I don't hear any difference in my voice versus how it was prior to the surgery a year and a half ago, right?
Well, and I'm sure it's so gradual, a lot of those changes.
Well, no, because it's surgery. It's supposed to be instant, right?
They
cut up on my throat and they cut my vocal cords in half, basically.
But in the beginning, wasn't your voice... I mean, I can't remember exactly what you sounded like directly after, but...
I was extremely hoarse.
Yeah, that's the thing. So it still takes a lot of time to recover. Yeah, for like a month at least, right? You couldn't even speak.
Well, for 3 weeks...
Or wasn't supposed to.
Yeah, for 3 weeks, I was not... And I didn't.
Yeah.
I did not speak at all for that entire 3 week period. I was under the assumption that something got messed up because I had just quit smoking. And I kept coughing the entire time I was supposed to be recovering. And they're like, look, you got to stop the coughing. So what the hell do you want me to do?
Yeah.
I would love to stop the coughing. And everything I looked up suggested that it was particles of various description that, you know, were left over there from the surgery that I was coughing up. But they insisted that it was a result of smoking. I don't know who was right, and it doesn't matter who was right. But I was under the assumption that because of all of that coughing, the result wasn't as good as I had wanted it to be. And, you know, I'm still not totally happy with the result. Don't get me wrong. I'm not happy about it. I wish I hadn't done it, but I don't live in a world of regrets like that. Like, what's done is done, and
you
I'm going
compare.
To move forward.
You couldn't be like, you wouldn't know how it would have turned out, so.
Very true. But I do know how it did turn out. And going back through, it's... When I hear my voice here today, most people just assume there's been no difference whatsoever. And I remember at one point Ian said that there didn't seem to be any difference whatsoever. And that's true until you go and listen to one of these older videos. And this is true of Free Talk Live episodes from 3 years ago as well. But there was a gradual change in my voice anyway that was happening. And I don't know what that was a result of, because hormones don't feminize your voice.
I'm wondering, they don't?
No, once your voice...
Wait, not at all?
No, once your voice drops, that's it.
I mean, I guess, but...
There's no undoing that.
But I know, like, so many trans women who didn't have the, whatever, vocal feminization surgery, right. And their voices are very feminine.
It's not as...
You know?
It happens, but I mean, vocal training is a big part of that, and that's probably why my voice gradually changed. But the hormones themselves, they don't affect your voice whatsoever.
I was wondering that. Because,
and it's weird when I run into the... Because trans people don't know this, right? Because they can go to doctors or whatever to get whatever answers to the questions they want to know. They don't look them up. They don't learn about it. But I began my transition in Mississippi, where there were no doctors from whom I could get answers. So I had to look this stuff up myself. We have Sam on the line from Ohio. Sam, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask if the banking problem has gone contagious yet, because I haven't seen any coverage of it, really.
The banking
like
problem,
mainstream.
You said?
I think they don't want to cover it, because they want... Since the dollar is based on the faith of the dollar, and that's it, I mean, the people's faith in the dollar, and that's it, they don't want to put anything out that is showing... Like, if you follow Aaron Day on Twitter, he's always posting stuff that's like, look at this that happened. So, basically... Nikki, three banks went down last week. And one of them was the second biggest, or the biggest.
Yeah, the Silicon
bank
Valley.
That one, yeah. And so
there was also Silvergate, which went down previously.
Yeah.
But they closed voluntarily. And then the most recent one happened in New York, and I don't remember its name.
I can never remember that one.
Signature?
Signature, yes.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, Signature Bank, yes.
And, well, I've been participating. I went and wired some more to turn into gold and crypto today. But
nice.
I want more people to participate in the run
and
on the banks.
I've heard of a lot of people doing this, and it's not on the mainstream news, but if you kind of know where to look, so to speak, there are a lot of people who are investing in gold and silver who previously were not. A lot of people who are deciding to invest in crypto, or at the very least, take their cash dollars out of the bank and, you know, lock it in a safe or bury it in their backyard or whatever. So I do think a lot of people are kind of starting to, if not wake up, get nervous. And they should be nervous. They should have been nervous before this, because the value of the dollar has been plummeting, especially after COVID with all of the printing of money that's been done. So,
yeah, the half of the money supply that was printed in a year that took like centuries to get to that same point.
Yeah, and I don't know what you mean when you say you're not seeing it. There's certainly something to the targeted advertising and, you know, the algorithms that serve you news that they believe you're interested in. But if you just go to DrudgeReport.com, which is an aggregator for mainstream news, like literally the first thing there is about a bank in France. A Swiss bank that's having these issues. And then the next one is about how ChatGPT is predicting the economic crash. Fallout is rocking Europe. ICANN is predicting a financial system breakdown. So, I mean, that's just Drudge Report right there without going to MSNBC or wherever that's actually running these stories. So it's definitely there.
But I'm
there.
Talking about, like, CNN. I'm, like, following, like, the news briefing thing they have, and I would figure this would be at the top of that list, and it isn't.
Well, the point of the news is to distract you from things that are happening in the world and to convince you that things aren't really that bad. So I'm not surprised that CNN isn't telling you that, you know, the world is falling. They're telling you that the world is falling in other ways, right? You know, mm-hmm. Violent crime is higher than ever. Mexicans are kidnapping Americans. They'll cry wolf about all of those things. But in regard to the actual economic collapse, no, their job is to distract you from that reality. And I wouldn't go to CNN to rely on your news anyway. One of the reasons I like the Drudge Report is that they do just collect all of the headlines that are many important headlines that are.
But I mean, that's not the only place I'm looking. I'm just saying, like, when I go to mainstream places, they're like compiling all the headlines. It's not showing up there.
But also, if you go to mainstream news sources, I've noticed if I go to ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox News, they all report on the same exact things. You know what I mean? Or it's from a different perspective. So they're all, you know, reporting on the official narrative. Like, this is the news that the people need to be hearing. And then if you go to some alternative news sources or just, you know, something that's different, like Reason or Drudge Report, you will see sometimes some different things, or at least from a different perspective.
I mean, part of the reason you're not seeing this is because, so I went to MSNBC.com, which is the leftist mainstream media site that I have explicit permission to use. And sure enough, the very first thing there is about Trump being indicted and a bumpy ride and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So even now.
Wait, he got indicted?
No.
Oh.
It's about if Trump gets indicted. But even now, what is 2023?
Mm-hmm.
3 years after Trump was removed from office, MSNBC is talking about him every single day. That's their job, is to distract you from all of the horrible things that are going on in the world by taking advantage of your outrage about Donald Trump and directing those that way. Now, Fox News has different stuff that they're getting people outraged about.
Yeah,
sex education, trans people, drag queens.
Wow.
Write a sexual fantasy short story. Oh, parents are upset. Their kids are being creeped out by teachers. That's
all this stuff that isn't actually issues.
Right. So another concern that Moody's has is that U.S. banks are raising the interest rates that they pay on savings accounts. And I could see from like a business perspective why this would concern Moody, right? Like if banks are going broke, then it would be a bad idea for them to pay out more interest, more money on savings account interest.
But I mean, they're raising interest rates on everything. I mean, even so, the market, the housing market has been wild recently. The first house, the cost of houses were almost double what they were in years previous. Now they've came down substantially, but the interest rates are 6, 7, 8, 9%.
Right. The interest rates are going up in everything that would make it harder for you to get money.
Yeah.
If it's going to make it easier for you to get money, then interest rates are going the other direction.
Yeah.
But that's not what they're saying is happening here. They're saying that they're actually paying out more money on savings accounts now. They're actually giving people more money for having money in their savings accounts. And
that's because of the treasury bonds.
Is that what?
That's what I heard, I think, yesterday on the show. I think Ian, he said that the treasury bonds are paying out more now. I don't know why, but they are.
Well, it's trivial, right? I had an account with a bank that was closed for like 3 years. And for 3 years, I waited on them to give me my money back. There was like $600 in the, it was a savings account. There was like $600 in the savings account. Well, banks are evil, right?
Yeah.
And they were in no hurry to do this. It's not their money. What do they care? And the interest rate on that money, it was like $660 and something over that 3 year period of not being able to touch this money, like 13 cents of interest.
Dang.
It's completely negligible. It's not worth considering. It's easy to forget it even exists.
Yeah. I remember my grandparents always telling me it's best to have your money in the bank because then you'll, it'll accrue interest.
Like what world are they from?
And then I'm looking at the interest that comes in on my account. I don't know if it's every month or however, but it's always cents.
Yeah.
It's never above a dollar. I'm like, I really could care less about that.
I think
I lose that in the laundry. You know what I mean?
Right. It's actually better to just spend your money because when you spend it like now, the things you're buying are going to be cheaper than they will in 10 years.
Well, and that's the thing too. And they'll be worth more. You know, it's a better investment for me to spend my money on a house or a car or whatever I want because that will be worth more than the actual money.
That's exactly how the economy ended up in this situation, though, is that the financial system, the U.S. dollar, they discourage people from saving money. They encourage people to instead spend their money because, as Bonnie pointed out, if I save $1,000, then 5 years from now, that $1,000 will buy less than it would buy if I spent it today.
Yep.
And that's just a fact of the currency system that we have. And this is true all the way back to 1913, where if you saved $20, then that $20 in 1913, if you saved a nickel, how am I trying to put this? It's worth a nickel. It's lost 95% of its value.
Wow. And
I'm spacing
crazy
on how to exactly relay that, but yes. So every
$20 is worth a nickel now.
$1.
$1.
Yes.
Okay.
That's why I was screwed up because my math was screwed up. So yes. So $20 that you saved back then, it buys the same thing that $1 would have bought back then. Yes. That's really hard to say over the air when you're trying to think it through at the same time. But anyway, so the depreciation of the dollar is real. And if my family had put back $100,000 or whatever, or $1,000 or what to them would have been $100,000, then if I looked in that account today, it would just be $1,000 or $5,000, or you do the math if you want while you're trying to have a conversation. I think it would be $5,000.
I was telling somebody the story of me almost getting a DUI today, and I said I had to pay a $350 fine. And I was like, honestly, not only did I like make not that much money, like, I don't know, $12 an hour, but also I feel like back then it was just like, that was so much more money to me. But it was like, I think that just sincerely bought more stuff back then
in
2016.
Caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, quite a bit. Listen, I'm tracking with you on the scamdemic and on the banking system. I am, though, in the Trump camp, if you will, so you kind of know where I'm coming from here.
Okay.
But, you guys keep bringing up like CNN and rightly, the mainstream media and MSNBC and all this. If you don't mind, I'd like you to, so we can have a full-on conversation on this. The alt media, in other words, you're part of the alt media with talk show. But are you guys familiar with the Gateway Pundit?
I'm not.
I've heard of it.
You're not.
I think it's usually like pretty right-wing.
Yeah, it would be labeled that, and it could well be. I go to the Gateway Pundit just about every day. They are Jim Hoft out of St. Louis. He's got some video on here, some J6 stuff, but also the banking. And he's not that far off with you for somebody that would be labeled on the right wing. You're talking to somebody here that supported Ron Paul. I did back in 08 when he ran. So I go way back. I'm not a libertarian, but I track with a lot of your guys' issues. And I am assuming you would call yourselves libertarian.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing about, I mean, I'm glad to hear that other people out there are talking about the economic collapse and all this other terrifying stuff. But the reality is that the truth is impartial. If there's something major happening, if we're watching an economic collapse now, I expect people on the left and people on the right and libertarians who exist outside of that spectrum to all be talking about it. I'm sure there's plenty of leftist media sites that are the leftist equivalent of Gateway Pundit.
Yeah, I wonder why isn't there? I mean, my attention.
Like Huffington Post, I'm sure they're railing about the financial collapse.
Oh, yeah. I just did a quick search on the Gateway Pundit, and what comes up on either Wikipedia or whatever Google search, the first thing that says is, the Gateway Pundit is a American far-right fake news website.
Wow.
So they're just completely dismissing them as fake news.
Yep. Yeah, it's not really fair. That's they were right. The only ones that I saw covering this story where... basically, what was it? Biden made a deal to give the WHO power over whenever we go into emergency status.
The World Health Organization?
Yes. And I didn't see anyone else reporting on it, but it was definitely true. Wasn't fake.
Yeah. Well, it's just like Alex Jones, where people just dismiss him as fake news, but he might be a nutcase, but a lot of the stuff he says is true.
Like David Icke.
Well, the fake news label is certainly dangerous, but Alex Jones in particular doesn't do himself any favors by saying things that are not true.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Gateway Pundit is more legit than Alex Jones. I'm sure they're more respectable. I know nothing about them, but it's hard to be, you know, less respectable than Alex Jones. But
I've got to back up what I said
a
little bit.
Am I still on with you guys?
I'm sorry, go
ahead. Am I still on?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, listen, again, I just throw it out for your consideration. Look at some of their stories. They have the great headlines. I don't always have time, you know, to tap in, just like I don't always have time to listen to you. Just to let you know, your show right now is on the normal Alex Jones time slot here in Salt Lake City.
Oh, nice.
So I just thought I'd let you know that I listen to a lot of things, get perspective. But the Gateway Pundit is right in the belly of the beast. And, yes, they do get Trump coming on there. On their website. So it is important when you consider that Trump and DeSantis are the front runners on the GOP, good or bad.
You should look into Aaron Day running from New Hampshire.
I will. I'm going to. I already jotted him down from earlier conversation. One last thing. I have a question for you, Bonnie. Is that you?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Bonnie, I know that you're not going to agree with everybody like Alex Jones and whatnot that go with the MyPillow man, Mike Lindell. But are you aware that at frankspeech.com, that's his network, they have a bevy of shows, and some are not that much different from this one. And he lines up and he gives them a voice in some ways bigger than what Elon Musk is doing.
Mike Lindell?
Radio shows. Huh?
Are you talking about Mike Lindell?
Yeah, at frankspeech.com. He has 20 syndicated internet and AM radio shows that he beams out over it, and I'm sure he doesn't agree with every host on there. It's just a thought that maybe you guys could hook up with them. I mean, they have Stu Peters. They have libertarians. And they're all, you know, we're not that far apart on some of the big issues.
I mean, we're not. But on some of these issues that are important to me, we are pretty far apart. Like MyPillow contacted Free Talk Live a number of months ago.
Yeah, I think they used to be an advertiser.
Well, they didn't.
Oh, never?
They wanted to. And they sent us some free samples, you know, they allowed us to order a pillow or a blanket.
Like over
or whatever.
A decade ago, they weren't?
No, just most recently.
No, yeah.
And we never on any occasion promoted them at all. And that's largely because of those places. We do agree on a lot. There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. I agree with conservatives on a lot. But those places where we disagree, some of those are pretty important. We do have Ian calling. Ian, I think I have you. Are you with us?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah. What's on your mind tonight?
So the whole Frank Social thing, they actually did when we were talking with them about, you know, them coming back to advertise with Free Talk Live, they were willing to put us on Frank Social, and we would be on there, except for they didn't have the ability to, like, take in our podcast feed into their system. So we would have had to upload every single night.
Don't we have like a really typical like RSS feed? Why?
Yeah.
So everyone that's on that show probably, or on Frank, whatever it's called, probably has to send it every night. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how it would have to be. So I was like, I don't want to do any more work. And I don't think you would either, Aria, just to be on one more website. So that's the reason we're not there. I said, you know, to them, well, you know, get back in touch if you guys can just take an RSS feed and then plug that into your system. Because that's how everybody else does it. You know, all the major platforms like Spotify or iHeartMedia, we don't have to do anything different just to get on there. So that's the reason why we're not there. It doesn't have anything to do with their politics. So they were willing to take us. So
now, is that their television network thing or their social? Because Frank Social appears to be, from what I could tell, some sort of social media thing.
Oh, sorry. I meant the other one, whatever the other one is. Frank
Speech.
Okay.
Speech. Yeah, that one. Yeah. So we would be there, but just weren't willing to do the hoop jumping.
It was a nice suggestion from the caller from Salt Lake City. Just, you know, anytime somebody wants to help get Free Talk Live out there more, it's a nice suggestion.
Yeah, thanks for that. That's all I had. Just wanted to clear that up.
Cool, thanks for clearing that up. Also, he brought this up during a break. MyPillow actually was an advertiser with Free Talk Live at one point. And I wasn't aware of that because it was before my time, before I had anything to do with Free Talk Live. So I would have no way of knowing that anyway. But it's not true to say, you know, MyPillow never advertised with Free Talk Live. And I don't know if I said never. I just know that most recently they had contacted and it didn't pan out. But anyway, so franksocial.com, I suspect it's a Mastodon server, but not being able to, my bill restrictions prohibit me from just joining social media all over the place. And honestly, I really wouldn't want to join.
I was about to say, would you though?
I mean, probably not, but I don't know. I have, in my past, I have joined all sorts of social media sites. I'm on Gab. I'm on Parler. And what I think Parler was the main Nazi one or the white supremacist one that actually kicked off Christopher Cantwell for being too extreme. But he wasn't necessarily just being too extreme. He was like, literally advocating for violence against politicians. Like,
it's crossing a line.
I don't want a transphobic person to bake me a cake.
It's
me
completely
either.
Stupid to just not bake a cake because you disagree with the people's lifestyle. Like, isn't your business just making cakes and making money off that? It's crazy. Well, but he should be allowed to do it.
I mean, yeah, honestly, even though I disagree with it, this person should be able to be like, no, you're gay. I don't want to bake you a cake. And as, you know, as a gay person or as anyone else who disagrees with this opinion, I wouldn't want that person to bake the cake for my wedding. Oh, you hate gay people? Okay, well, I will not give you my money. I will not give you my business. Why would I force them to?
Isn't that bizarre? Right?
Like, it's so bizarre.
If I knew this restaurant owner hated me, why would I go to their restaurant?
Yeah, right. Take my money.
Yeah, I would go to any of the other restaurants where I wouldn't have my food spit in or whatever. And it's true that most people are more professional with that. In my years of doing food service, I've never seen a single person actually mess with another person's food, like spitting in or something like that. I think it's probably almost entirely a myth and doesn't actually happen. Maybe it does.
I've never seen it happen.
But it's got to be extremely rare. But still, I wouldn't even want to, like, there are other bakers to whom I could go and be like, hey, I want a trans cake. Because that was how he found out. It wasn't just he didn't approve of their lifestyle of being trans. This trans one, the most recent one, they wanted him to bake a cake that was blue on the outside and pink on the inside.
Like a gender reveal?
Sort of, except, you know, it's blue on the outside, boy on the outside, but on the inside, they're really a girl. They're really pink. And, like, that's cute and clever and all that. But they told the guy why they wanted it to be pink on the inside and blue on the outside. Or it was the other way around, pink on the outside and blue on the inside. I don't know. But they told him what the meanings of this were. It wasn't just, oh, well, you know, we have twins and one's a boy or girl. And wouldn't have been right to lie either. But they could have just specified what kind of cake they wanted and been done with it. But no, they specifically said, this is to celebrate my transition.
Yeah.
And it's like, at that point, you're trying to create, it's just like the Canadian who keeps going to beauty salons to get bikini waxes. And then she gets upset because they don't want to wax her male genitalia. It's completely insane. If you go out looking for problems, don't be surprised when you find them. But some of us aren't looking for problems. I just want to know, oh, that guy's homophobic. Well, I don't want to give him my business. Yeah. I'm going to go elsewhere. But we can't find out about those people because it's dangerous economically. And in some ways, they may actually be, you know, have their property damaged or vandalized or destroyed or attacked to come out as, you know, homophobic or transphobic. So I don't agree with any of that. I think people should be able to say what they want. And I should be able to counter what they say with what I believe are better ideas. And in the long run, I believe that the idea that is better will ultimately win out. It's just the free market applied to ideas. And in the long run, the better business will survive and the worst businesses will die out. And I think that's true of culture as well. In the absence of force, the better cultures, the stronger cultures, the more resilient cultures will survive longer. And the worst cultures will fade out faster. And I think what makes a culture stronger is diversity and acceptance and tolerance and peace and compassion and being willing to accept one another as they are, not trying to force them into one particular mold or another. I think those things make a strong society. And I suspect in the long run of human history, we'll find that's the case. But I don't know, right? Maybe it's better. Maybe it's better for humanity. It ensures humanity's survival to have this strict Nazi regime.
Yeah, doubtful.
I mean, it's doubtful. It doesn't sit well with me, but it's not impossible that humanity, by adopting this culture of tolerance and compassion, will die out a century from now. Mm-hmm. But if we had gone the Nazi approach, then humanity would live for 10 or 15,000 years.
There's no way to know.
Yeah, there's no way to know. And I want to err on the side of caution, right? And if humanity has to become Nazis to live for another 15,000 years, I think I would rather die out peacefully and compassionately within the next 100 years than have humanity persist on in a tyrannical, nightmarish hellscape.
Absolutely. And I think the key word about what you were just talking about with your free market of ideas is with the absence of force.
Yes.
So unfortunately, we don't really have that right now anywhere in the world that I'm aware of.
Major, you're on Free Talk Live.
Well, I reckon one monster a day is enough for anybody to have to slay.
Yeah. You would think.
Area, I really don't understand. I've heard you and Bonnie both in the last week or so just attack Catholicism. And
I,
we are,
I didn't.
Like it or not, we are 50% of the population. And you're alienating half.
Wait. 50% of the population is not Catholic.
Yeah, I don't think that's true. But even if it is, I just... If 100%...
Right, maybe I misinterpreted. Maybe I should have said Christian.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, even if...
There's 2,040 denominations.
Hey, man. Hey. There is no need to yell at people here. Like, if you... I've only got you on hold. I didn't hang up on you. But I need you to hang up and, like, not yell at Bonnie when you're trying to make your point.
Also, I can't let Bonnie take the downfall for my criticism of Catholicism.
I was like, I didn't say anything about Catholicism.
It was me on Sunday that was talking about Catholicism.
Like, I don't think I've talked about that in like many weeks, Catholicism specifically. But anyways, even if 100% of everyone on earth except me was wrong, I would still say the right things that were true. Because I serve truth, yeah. Not some imaginary being.
I'm so glad you got it all figured out at the age of 25. My truck's older than you.
I'm 26.
My truck's still older than you.
I mean, is that... and then he hung up, so I guess that's fine. He didn't... I don't know, that was bizarre.
I don't know, he's on one tonight.
Yeah. First of all, he apparently was talking about Nikki, and I mean, and he still got mad at me about it.
Really good point there, Bonnie. Neither one of us even mentioned Christianity tonight. I mean, there's all kinds of things I want to say against Christianity. In fact, I watched one of my Bible streams, one of my satanic Bible studies a few weeks ago. Like I said, I couldn't sleep, so I watched my old stuff on YouTube. And like, that was actually really good content, right?
dang, that chick's onto something.
Yeah, it was really fun to do. It was really entertaining. And I could do a better one now than I did then, just because I know so much more about producing content than I did back then. Like, this was right at the beginning of my sheriff campaign, or maybe before it, where I knew the basics of how to produce content. And that's why they came out as good as they did. But I know so much more now. And the satanic Bible studies, I don't want to call them satanic Bible studies, though, because that makes it sound like we're doing a study on the satanic Bible.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's the Bible from a Satanist perspective. But what else would you call that if not a satanic Bible study? But like, I don't generally make it a point to even talk about Christianity, and neither me or Bonnie have mentioned it tonight.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And specifically Catholicism, I don't even know much about it, and I say that all the time. Like, I was, like, just basically a Christian fundamentalist as a kid. We just went to whatever church most aligned with my parents, and they didn't like anything that went away from, like, to, you know, interpreting the Bible as if everything in it is, you know, like, true and the inerrant word of God. And honestly, I think that the only Christians that make any sense, if you're going to be Christian, are the ones who interpret it all as it says. Like, I don't know. I just think Catholics are weird because they have, like, not weird, weirder than others, but I think it's weird that there's all this lore around it that's not even in the Bible.
When John McCain died, I wagged my finger at the libertarians. I was like, look, this was still a human being. As evil as he was, he had people who cared about him, people who loved him. His grandkids loved him. And, you know, we should still not dance on his grave. And that's true. And I have to agree
to disagree, but sure. Go on.
Meaning, well, most libertarians did. And that's true. I would try to make the same sort of argument about most people who die. But when it comes to the Banks, no one's dead. Hmm. And I have no qualms whatsoever about dancing on these people's graves.
I don't know. It does have the possibility to ruin a lot of people's lives.
Not
and
if
to
they
really
were paying
put them
attention.
In.
Right, right. That's
but
the thing.
No
like,
one's
been
paying
saying...
attention though, besides us. Like, to be honest, like, you think all these like boomers and all these old people know what's going on? They're watching Fox News.
I have no sympathy for boomers because they did this.
I was about to make exactly that same point. I have a really hard time going, oh, the poor boomers.
Okay. I feel worse for the Generation Z people who are basically going to end up, like, you know, getting coming of age during this type of crisis, just like what happened to the millennials in 2008.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, the boomers, all of this that we see, this is directly of their creation.
Yeah.
Like, this economic collapse, it's got boomer written all over it.
The only
right.
boomers
Screw
I
them.
Care about are, well, okay, I care about my grandparents, and I don't really know how much gold they have, but Chris and Colleen from the Moose Mart, they buy crypto and gold and silver, so I don't really care about any other boomer.
That's a good. I wouldn't really consider them boomers. It's not just about age, right? It's about mentality.
Yeah,
right. I completely forgot they were boomers, and I said, okay, boomer once, and they like didn't laugh, and I was like, wait, are you guys really boomers? I didn't think they were boomers.
They act like Gen X more than anything. So, I mean, it's like an age thing, right? Being a boomer isn't just about being older. It's about being self-absorbed.
Yeah.
It's about being disconnected from reality and the hardships that ordinary people actually face.
Oh, I just thought of some more. But they're also free staters and they buy crypto and gold, so it's fine.
Yeah. And they're not boomers. I don't think. They may be older, but they're not boomers.
Yeah, no. Boomers is different.
I mean, there are millennial boomers out there. There are Gen X boomers out there. And that's because a lot of the boomer generation fits this stereotype, but boomer has taken on a meaning of its own that isn't just that generation of people. It's the entitled, screaming, self-absorbed type of person who believes that their actions don't have any consequences and everything that happens to other people that's bad is their own fault and nothing that happens to them is their own fault. And their economic system is collapsing around them, and I'm not upset about it. It seems to be collapsing. I have something in my eye still. It seems to be collapsing around them. I'm certainly hoping so. We've seen three banks go down just in the last few months. One of them was the largest bank to ever go down. And, you know, it's been said a lot. Are these bailouts, this thing that just happened with Signature Bank, where the federal government went in, they took it over, and they said, look, we're going to guarantee everyone's money here. Hmm. What is this if not a
they
bailout?
They did that with Signature. I knew they did that with
the Silicon Valley,
but I didn't know with Signature.
Well, I thought it was both of them.
They did.
I believe they seized it, but
I believe it was. Or they just took control of it.
And
or
I'm
something.
Not saying you're wrong. I just honestly didn't know.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. So, I mean, if you remember otherwise, then you're absolutely more likely to
be
right.
No, I don't even remember
I
otherwise. I just thought when they seized it, I thought that meant something else. I thought they seized it as in no one's getting their money back. I don't know.
But this article that I have from the garrisoncenter.org, it does mention Silicon Valley Bank. So it doesn't even matter whether or not I'm right or wrong about Signature Bank, because it's about Silicon Valley Bank, which is in that position. U.S. President Joe Biden stresses that Silicon Valley Bank is not getting a bailout, The Hill reported on March the 13th.
But he's lying.
Yes. No losses will be borne by the taxpayers, he said, of the federal government's decision to cover depositor losses in excess of $250,000. And now look.
Yeah, right. How would it not?
Think about how much money you have to be willing to leave $250,000 just sitting in a bank.
From my understanding, I think most bank accounts with $250,000 or more in it are going to be businesses. You know,
probably.
People that are running payroll and, you know, need
True.
That much money in a bank account to be able to pay employees and whatnot. And, you know.
But with all of this being the case, I would imagine that these businesses would not allow more than $250,000 in any particular account. And they would just have, you know, if they needed three accounts with, if they had $750,000,
that
would
be
open
a lot
up three
of work.
Accounts.
Well, with like,
I think that'd be a lot.
With
Most
the Silicon Valley one,
there.
Those were huge businesses. So they had like a whole lot more in each. Like some of them had like billions, but I mean, that's crazy. But that's just the confidence most people have in the dollar, I guess.
It's still so far removed from the concerns of the average person that when you talk about paying back this company or that company, even hundreds of thousands of dollars, they're like, yeah, I can't afford my rent this month, but you tell me more about how you're going to make sure that big companies get all their money back. And then you say millions, the problem gets even worse. So that's what all of this is these companies, these people, mostly businesses, as Bonnie and Nikki have pointed out, have money in these banks. And the federal government was supposed to insure it up to $250,000, but they're going above and beyond that and saying, look, we're going to insure all of it. So even though we're only required, if you had $10 million, even though we're only required to give you $250,000, we're so wonderful, your government's so wonderful, that we're going to go ahead and give you all of your money.
And somehow the taxpayer isn't paying for it, even though that is impossible.
Instead, the money will come from the fees that banks pay into the deposit insurance fund, whatever that means. I mean,
they don't have enough in it.
Yeah, that wouldn't even... It just doesn't make sense, right?
No,
yeah, they don't have enough.
I don't remember the numbers, but Ian and Lee were talking about it. They said, literally, the amount that's in there is not enough to cover it. So where's the rest of it coming from? I don't know. Lee had an explanation.
I mean,
wouldn't... taxpayers will be hurt.
I wouldn't be able to, like, have the resources to be able to do the math to prove that point. But just thinking logically, how would they have enough money from the fees? It's just
billions of dollars.
I just don't see it.
Well, it's like insurance, right? And that's sort of the idea here. If you have 300 banks in the United States all paying this insurance and none of them ever need it, then you should have a fair bit amount. So when Silicon Valley Bank goes under, you've got all of these banks that have been paying in for the last 50 years. You've got all of their insurance money. So you should have enough money to cover it. But of course, that's not the way the U.S. government actually does things.
Yeah.
But in theory, you know, it says, okay, these 100,000 people have been paying insurance for the last 10 years. Now one of them has had an accident and it's going to cost us, you know, $4 million. But that's okay because we've made more than $4 million over the last 10 years selling these people insurance. So it's supposed to function like that. I mean, it's literally called insurance.
Also, they shouldn't be insuring these people their entire amounts. They should only be $250,000 each. I just realized that would make a big difference.
That would absolutely make a big difference. And some sort of private insurance fund, I think, would be better, right? If this wasn't done by the federal government, if the banks had to buy insurance, I think I would be okay with that. And they apparently do have to buy it from the federal government, or they have to pay into the federal government through the deposit insurance fund, but it's not a free market. And I suspect the reason it's not a free market is because banks are so terrible with money that it's a losing proposition to insure banks' money against losses. But what we're seeing here is just yet another example of privatized profits and socialized losses. And we've seen this over and over and over throughout human history, where when a company makes money, when Silicon Valley Bank makes money, their CEOs, their upper management, they get to pocket that. But when they lose money, all of us have to foot that bill. We saw the same thing with airlines. When Delta makes money, their CEOs get wealthier. all of their higher up employees get wealthier. But when they lose money and they need a bailout because they're going to collapse otherwise, and the government goes, okay, well, here's $600 billion or whatever, that comes out of us. So they get to keep all of the profits, and they don't have to pay any of the losses. It's privatized profits, socialized losses.
In both those industries, airlines and banks, you, listener, can't just be like, I'm going to open an airline tomorrow. Like, it doesn't matter how good your ideas are, how many people are supporting you, and how much money you have. Like, it's at least really, really difficult to create a bank or create a new airline because of the federal government.
That's the worst thing I foresee about this. It's just going to cause the FDIC to run out of money faster, because there are more banks that are going to collapse. More runs of banks are going to happen. And the FDIC is going to run out of money. You're going to be sitting there at whatever, at Sycamore Bank in Mississippi, wondering why you can't get all $250,000 of your money back. And it's going to be because the federal government gave it instead.
Mm-hmm. To the super rich Silicon Valley Bank.
Yes.
Businesses.
Like, this is money that supposedly was to be used to guarantee your money. And now they're paying above and beyond to Silicon Valley Bank, and I think to St. Jude Bank, but at least to Silicon Valley Bank. And that's just going to cause them to run out of money faster. To add insult to injury, the depositors getting bailed out could have avoided the whole situation by spreading their deposits across different banks with no more than $250,000 at each bank, which, you know, if you're writing $100,000 checks regularly, you're right. That would be a giant pain. But if you're just paying like a normal payroll and you have an income stream coming in each week, I don't see any reason why it would be a pain, but it should be doable, I would think, with a lot of these cases. But why should these people bad judgment? Because if you know your money is insured only up to $250,000.
Yeah, it would be dumb to put more than that in there.
Right. And I would suggest it would be bad judgment and their banker's bad judgment. So why should all of that be expensed to us?
Yeah, it's not my problem. I didn't do it.
No, but if you're a customer of a bank, you're going to be paying for this. If you're a customer of a bank, you are paying for Silicon Valley Bank to have its money returned to them.
Yep.
But it shouldn't be this way. As we saw with the 2007-2008 collapse, American finance is a house of cards simply because it can be. Privatize the profits, socialize the losses. That's the governmental policy that we see today. And it ensures that the costs of poor decision-making aren't borne by the poor decision-makers. So thank you so much to Tom Knapp at the Garrison Center for that awesome article and the nice little summary about the Silicon Bank situation and what's happening there.
It made it a lot more easy for me to understand, because I knew somehow or another the American people are going to be bearing the brunt of this because of the Silicon Valley Bank, but I couldn't wrap my mind around why.
And that's assuming that they're actually going to stick to their plan of paying for this only from the other money that banks have paid into it. They have money sitting around that they've already printed. They say, no, look, we won't print money to pay for this, but if they've already printed that money, then they're not printing money to pay for it, and they're going to have to print more money to replace the money that they spent. So one way or the other, yes, anytime the government gives people money, because the government doesn't have a job.
Right.
The only income they have is supposedly, and it's supposed to be, through taxation, right? They get 12% of your income or 20% of your income each year, and they use that to spend however they want. But in reality, they have this entire system set up where they borrow money from banks, and they just inflate the hell out of the currency, and they just add zeros on a sheet of paper, and that's how much money they have. And it hurts the amount of money that you and I actually have. As we mentioned previously, where the U.S. dollar has lost 95% of its value from the creation of the USD in 1913, or the creation of the Federal Reserve Bank in 1913.
Yeah, you know, I feel kind of bad for the people who just don't understand this stuff because they have to go work at Walmart every day or whatever. But at the same time, it's just like, it's having bad judgment in any way is your fault. Like, if you're having a bad judgment to go home and watch cartoons every night instead, I don't know why I say cartoons, but, you know, just entertainment every single night.
Yeah, something that's not enriching.
So many years ago, before the Crypto 6 thing happened, Rich and I were at, this is before he even changed his name to Rich, we were at the Porcupine Freedom Festival or Fork Fest or something. We're just hanging out on LSD or shrooms or whatever in the parking lot. I don't remember what we were on. But we were talking about me being crazy. He's like, well, you're a crazy Satanist, anarchist, trans chick or whatever. And I was like, look, man, anyone who exists today and they're not an anarchist, trans, Satanist, whatever, is the crazy one. And he said back to me, yeah, and having your own definition where you're not crazy and everyone else is the definition of crazy.
Oh.
And I wasn't in a mindset really to then, like, all I could do is glare at him like, that was, I had some choice words for it. You can't tell someone who's tripping on shrooms that they're crazy and be right.
I wouldn't say that you're like just like crazy.
No.
But my sister, who is crazy, believes that she is normal. She's like, everyone else is being stupid. Everyone else is being annoying. It's like when people are doing regular things, she'll be like, I just stared at her because she's being so stupid. And it's something like the lady was like, wear clothes. I'm not joking. Somebody at HEB told my sister, like, wear clothes. You need to make your way to the front. And she was just like, I just kept shopping because that lady was, not that she was crazy, but just like F that lady. And that's right. How my sister acts. She's, and that's why we haven't talked in a couple of years, because we got in a fight where she was obviously in the wrong. And she was just like, it's all my fault. You know, that's crazy.
Sure. Well, I obviously don't think I'm crazy. And, I don't think that Rich thinks I'm crazy. That was just a conversation that two friends were having while we were on LSD in the mountains, right?
But it is a good definition.
It is. And it's similar to what I was just saying. And I've never been so convinced that we are, in fact, taking part in a cult as I am right now. Because, like, if we were in a cult, we would be sitting here pointing our fingers at everyone else saying, no, you guys are the cult. We're the sane ones. We're not a cult. You're a cult. But, like, we're a cult.
I don't really mind being called a cult, but according to the parameters, apparently Ann said we're not.
And, of course, the Branch Davidians, the people who were there at Waco when the ATF and the FBI just demolished them and started murdering them, they were convinced that they were not a cult. They were the normal ones. And everyone else, it was the outside world that was wrong. So, no, we're not a cult, but it's fun to entertain the possibility.
So, I guess according to the definitions of a cult, most of them are a religious thing, which I wouldn't...
Well, the Shire Society is a religious thing. Well, the Shire Society isn't.
The Shire Free Church
absolutely isn't. It owns Free Talk Live.
That's true. But it's also a misplaced or excessive admiration for a particular person or thing.
But that's the thing. Lots of people in our circles admire, like, Ian, but it's not misplaced. It's not like we think of him as, like, a god. We just admire him because he's really freaking cool.
The opposition, so to speak, would say that it's misplaced.
I don't know. I don't think it's fair, because it's like, if somebody is just calling themselves God and you have to be like, we all have to like him. First of all, if anybody on the show was just like, I don't really like Ian, I don't think he would like kick him off for it. Like,
no, I mean, why would they be on the show though?
Yeah,
that'd be weird.
Like, why are you coming here?
Yeah, I agree entirely. And that's the mythology that the government was creating in the trial here, is that Ian's sort of this cult leader head. And it's like, have you met the guy? Because that's not an accurate description.
No. And it's weird because he's a Leo, but he really isn't that interested in being like the center of attention.
Right. I mean, there's a camera here that's in front of me that is, it's camera 4, and we have a camera switcher script going. Ian purposefully turns off this camera anytime he's sitting in this particular chair, just because he doesn't want to be the center of attention. As you said, he doesn't want it to be fixated on him.
It's so weird because he's not really like Leo at all. And he's like dead in the middle of Leo.
Mark thinks it's because he thinks he's ugly.
Yeah, that's what Mark told me.
I know, but Mark doesn't know what Mark is talking about. Well, Mark knows what Mark is talking about, but Mark is wrong.
Mark just likes to say things. And I don't believe that that's true. Ian doesn't think he's ugly.
I sat right here tonight back before all of the Crypto 6 stuff. It was myself, Ian, and Mark on the show, where Mark made the allegation that Ian began taking Metamucil because he wanted bigger, and Mark's exact words, he wanted bigger, more robust number twos.
And, ew,
right,
what?
And that was the allegation that Mark put forward. And Mark believed this. He wasn't just making this up on the spur of the moment. He genuinely believed that this was how things had happened. So we mentioned previously the drug war and how legalizing drugs, ending the drug war, It has the most obvious effects of making drugs safer. It ends the drug war. So it ends the cartels.
Yep.
And we've seen this happen repeatedly throughout the world. And I think Oregon is trying decriminalization right now. When you legalize drugs and you stop criminalizing addiction, you end up with more people seeking treatment for addiction. You have lower drug addiction rates. The drugs are less deadly because people aren't buying fentanyl on the streets or cooking up crocodile themselves or whatever. They're instead buying it from a reputable dealer, quote, reputable in quotation marks dealer. It's got all of these nice little side effects. And we saw the same thing happen in Nevada where prostitution is legal, where you don't have a lot of sex trafficking there. And to so many people, sex trafficking and prostitution are the same thing, where you can't have, the reason they got so upset about, I think it was Backpage, which was, it was basically a prostitution website that people used on the internet to find potential clients. The reason they got so upset about it was because they were like, oh, this is helping facilitate sex trafficking, when the opposite was true.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of people who were
like
on
sex
Backpage,
trafficking, as in the way that people use it, as in somebody against their will being taken around,
yes,
and, you know, sold for sex.
Yes, that's what they mean when they say sex trafficking. And legalizing prostitution almost universally but significantly reduces sex trafficking. And we saw that exact thing with the elimination of Backpage, where it was estimated that it would take 25 times the number of cops to achieve the same reduction in prostitution rates and sex trafficking rates that were achieved by Backpage.
Wow.
So
it doesn't even effective. Make sense why prostitution would be illegal. Because it's my body. Why can't I sell it if I want to? You know?
That's the one way you're not allowed to sell your body. I sell my body every week at my place of employment.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people in the military, they have to get vaccines and stuff.
Yeah, it's way worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of them literally die selling their bodies.
Well, yeah, I can kill and I can die, but I can't have sex with someone for money. That just doesn't make sense.
It's just because they want to corner the market because they have all this creepy stuff going on behind the scenes.
Probably. It's the same reason why drugs are illegal.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm speculating.
The government's
but
involved in that. The CIA gets money from that. So why would I think that they didn't do creepy prostitution, probably pedophile stuff?
There's also this mythology that, you know, sex is like this puritanism that's still rampant in the United States. This idea that sex is holy and it's between a man and a woman who love each other, and any other sex is immoral and unlawful. There are plenty of people out there today who believe that sex between people who aren't married is immoral. And I don't understand where those people are coming from, but they believe it.
I mean, if they believe that, that's fine, but mind your own business.
Right.
So if you think that, then you can live your own life like that. And I totally respect that too. You know, I kind of get that philosophy, whatever.
Yeah.
But don't push your beliefs on other people, because as we have seen hundreds of years throughout the span of history, that is not, for the most part, what sex is.
No, and it becomes pushed on to other people when that's the issue with the Puritanism and the Christianity, is that they did push their beliefs onto other people. That's why we're still dealing with the ramifications of it today. This transgender nonsense that we're dealing with right now, it's just an extension of the Puritanism, going all the way back to some libertarian called recently to tell us how wrong it is to expose kids to sex. And we pointed out that we're not exposing kids to sex. And we even got him to admit that, okay, well, the worst thing we're dealing with here is like kids playing doctors with each other. And even that, this person was like, no, that's sinful, that's shameful, and
seriously?
That shouldn't happen.
Yeah. What does playing doctors with each other mean?
Exploring each other's bodies as kids in a probably a sexual way, but they don't mean any harm. They're like 6 or 7 years old or whatever. Hmm. And it's just kids being kids. To this Puritan, I mean, he's not even a Puritan. He's just a normal libertarian. I don't remember his name now, but I remember he was a libertarian. That was evil. It's automatically evil. We have a new story, Bonnie, you brought in tonight, about the legalization of prostitution and how it's leading to a reduction in the rate of rape and sex trafficking.
Yes, this is from Reason. Rape rates go down as countries legalize prostitution and rise with sex work prohibition.
I like that they're calling it rape instead of sex trafficking, Because obviously that sort of sex trafficking where a person is having sex with people against their will or whatever.
Is rape.
That's rape.
Yeah.
So let's just call it that and let's not call it sex trafficking because sex trafficking is just presumably selling sex.
Right. That's a good point. It says liberalizing prostitution laws leads to a significant decrease in rape rates, according to a study published in the Journal of Law and Economics, while prohibiting it leads to a significant increase.
Amazing. And the Journal of Law and Economics wrote this?
The Journal of Law and Economics.
And they said, let's repeat that for all the dense people in the back who weren't listening, that legalizing prostitution leads to a reduction in rape and sex trafficking.
Yep.
And outlawing prohibition, making prostitution illegal, leads to an increase.
And I would say that just regular rape, as in like somebody just getting raped once and then the person running away, that probably it hasn't gotten into it yet, but I bet that goes down as well.
Oh,
because
sure.
It's like people who aren't suppressed and have a ability in a way to go have sex for money are less likely to want to rape someone.
Well, and this is what it is. Like, unfortunately, you know, with human beings being sexual creatures, a lot of people will need a release. And if they are otherwise undesirable or unable to find a sexual partner, some people, if they're sick enough, they will do anything to get that release. So they could either pay a prostitute to do it or they could rape some woman in the street.
I had always heard that the reason that most people who commit rape do so is because of a power thing and not anything to do with actual sexual desire. Because, I mean,
that could be
to
true.
Be both, though. It's like, it's a sexual power thing.
I wouldn't know. Honestly.
I wouldn't either. But a person can release their sexual desires in ways that don't involve rape.
That's true.
But it's like a sexual control thing. If it was just a control thing, they would just be like a mean boss.
I mean, you could do different. Okay, I'm not going to get into it, but yeah, continue.
It says, for the study, researchers Hua Sheng Gao and Vanya Petrova of China's Fudan University looked at data from 31 European countries spanning a period between 1990 and 2017. During this time period, 8 countries, which were Spain, Denmark, Hungary, the Netherlands, Germany, Slovenia, Latvia, and Romania, liberalized their prostitution laws, while 6 countries, which were Sweden, Croatia, Norway, Iceland, France, and Ireland, cracked down on prostitution.
Oh, okay, so they literally have both sets here that they can look at. These people who legalized prostitution and these people who went all law and order on prostitution. Interesting data set. So they can draw some reasonable conclusions based on whatever it is they observe from these two sets.
It says, overall, liberalizing prostitution laws was linked to a significant decrease in rape rates, while prohibition was linked to a significant increase. But the magnitude of these two shifts was far from equal. Rather, the magnitude of prohibiting commercial sex is about 4 times as large as that of liberating it.
I didn't catch that.
I'm not sure what the magnitude means. The magnitude of these two shifts.
It sounds like increasing policing or clamping down on prostitution is 4 times more likely to
increase the
rape rate as legalizing it is to decrease the rape rate.
That makes sense.
I can see why they worded that as weirdly as they did, because there's no good way to word that.
Yeah, exactly.
So clamping down significantly increases the rate of raping and sex trafficking, essentially.
It says the average rape rate in the sample countries was 9 rapes per 100,000 people. Countries that liberalized prostitution saw a decrease of approximately 3 rapes per 100,000 people, relative to countries that did not change their prostitution laws.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.